Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. According to YouGov.com, fried chicken ranks among the top five most popular foods in the U.S. The dish not only sits right next to the American cheeseburger, it bests apple pie and far outranks hot dogs. And it's so dearly savored that each July 6th, National Fried Chicken Day celebrates crispy, crunchy, cooked in hot oil bird. Now, fried chicken is also one of my personal favorite foods, so much so we're talking about it today as a tie-in to our show tomorrow. That's when we'll be doing a roundtable dubbed STL Chicken Fight to celebrate all the great fried chicken to be had in the St. Louis region. And yes, that means y'all in the Metro East too. That's a bit of the backstory to our fried chicken coverage this week, but the origins of the dish itself, it deserves some explanation. So to provide some historical background and talk facts, myths, and fried chicken magic, we welcome Adrian Miller, aka the Soul Food Scholar. He's also the author of the James Beard Award-winning book, Soul Food, The Surprising Story of an American Cuisine, One Plate at a Time. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us on St. Louis on the Air.
Hey, good to be with you.
So, Adrian, this history of fried chicken, what is the concise version of it?
So the chicken that we, fried chicken we think about in the United States is bone-in pieces that are breaded and deep fried or shallow pan fried. So it's different than what you see in other cultures because fried chicken exists in other cultures. So the concise history is this version of a written down recipe is floating around in European culture in the 1600s, 1700s, the earliest kind of written down one that we see in English are in cookbooks from Great Britain in the mid-1700s. And those cookbooks were used by people in the American South and other parts of the U.S. And so that dish really gets transfixed in the American South when you get in the late 1820s the publication of The Virginia Housewife. And that is considered the quintessential American fried chicken recipe, where you've got chicken breaded in flour. It could be dipped in a batter, but then fried in lard to just golden deliciousness, and then served with some kind of bread and gravy.
Mm-hmm. So when we talked to prep for this conversation, Adrian, you had said that you could provide the concise version. What I'm interested in is the marinate before we get to frying version. What are some of those elements that maybe don't get talked about in the short history of fried chicken?
I think one of the things is the extent to which the dish was popular across cultures, because in a lot of Asian cultures, you've got bite-sized, almost what we would call nuggets today, a bite-sized version of it that can be either boned or deboned. And so the dish was just floating around in a lot of places. So we think of this as an American invention, but it's really a certain type of fried chicken that really takes flight in the United States. Mm-hmm. But it exists in all these other cultures, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. The recipe that you had mentioned in that cookbook, do you recall what that recipe consisted of? And does it really reflect what those early recipes were like?
Yeah, so it was very simple. So it just said, the recipe was to marinate chickens. So it wasn't even called fried chicken. Mm-hmm. And it just said, get a whole chicken, cut it up into parts, dredge in flour, and then fry in lard. That was it. And so that's pretty much the same template for what you see in the Virginia Housewife cookbook, with only slight variation, the addition of gravy and the suggestion of serving some kind of bread with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very simple, but that's the template for fried chicken as we know it in the U.S.
And serving with bread.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, some kind of bread. Yeah, it could be a cornbread, it could be rolls, it could be biscuits. The idea of serving fried chicken with some kind of bread is pretty common. One common popular version of it today is serving it with a waffle. So chicken and waffles is really just fried chicken with some kind of bread.
Right. So I mean, fried chicken today, Adrian, is everywhere. How is it that that's happened?
Well, it used to be a once in a while dish because old school fried chicken was labor intensive because you had to catch that chicken, kill it, pluck it, then butcher it, flour it, cook it, all that kind of stuff. And then deep fat frying was a sign of wealth. Not everybody had access to fat like that. So it was a special occasion dish, typically eaten only in the spring and the summer. So you fast forward to the 20th century, and one of the miracles of our industrial food system is now you can mass produce this dish that was occasionally eaten. We think about Colonel Sanders as probably the face of doing this, but he came up with a method of cooking a whole bunch of chickens at one time using pressure cooking, basically, and started the Kentucky Fried Chicken chain. And you see fried chicken then mushrooming into chains. And then that's why it's all over the place, because it's something that you can now make quickly, and it's delicious, and it's beloved.
Mm-hmm. You're mentioning KFC. That was actually the first place that I had fried chicken. And this was up in Southern Ontario, in Canada, probably like late 70s, early 80s. I don't remember how old I was at that time. So it was really then the ability to mass produce and to do so quickly that got KFC going.
Yes, yes. So that was Colonel Sanders' genius, was coming up with this a method to mass produce it. And it was a method that existed before, because there was a version of fried chicken called Maryland fried chicken, where if you're cooking it in a skillet, you would cover it to essentially steam cook the fried chicken and then remove it towards the end of the cooking process just to crisp up the skin. So mm-hmm. it's really that cooking method on steroids.
Right. You know, the number of fried chicken chains there are, KFC got its start in the 1930s, I think, with a single spot, and then started franchising near Salt Lake City, of all places, in 1952. And then there were other chains like Popeyes, which began in Louisiana. Lee's Chicken. Are you familiar with Lee's?
No, I don't know about Lee's Chicken.
Well, a fun fact with Lee's, my research shows that the person who started Lee's Chicken was actually the nephew of Harlan Sanders, of KFC fame, and that got its start in Ohio. As I said, I love fried chicken, so learning about all of this was really interesting. Fried chicken, though, I mean, it has been called soul food. Does it qualify as that? Is that the best way to describe it, Adrian?
Well, I think early on, you probably would say, I would say, that fried chicken was definitely pan-Southern, and pun intended. So it was something that both soul food and Southern food could claim. Because before you get to soul food, really this food was all called Southern food. And it didn't matter who was cooking it. It was more about the region. Because you had African-Americans and other people making this dish. And soul food is really the food that's taken out of the South and it's transplanted in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And fried chicken was definitely one of them, because it was such a one of the just top dishes to celebrate the cuisine. So I think it belongs in both cultures. Of course, I'm going to say soul food cooks make it better, but that's just me being, you know, a booster.
Okay. We're talking today with the soul food scholar and James Beard Award-winning author Adrian Miller about fried chicken facts, its history, and we're going to get into some myth-busting next, and we're also discussing its appeal. A recent YouGov poll shows that fried chicken sits among the top five most popular foods in the U.S. So this thing about myths, Adrian, I want to make sure that we address that as you are talking about fried chicken being soul food, and some of the ideas that have very intentionally been cultivated about who eats fried chicken. Talk with us about that.
Right. So these had been floating around in the 19th century, but really gained momentum after emancipation, because a culture war was launched against African Americans as newly freed participants in our society. And this culture was using food tropes to basically say, hey, African-Americans, they're not really human beings, or they're infant-like, bestial. And so they would talk about African-Americans eating these foods, namely fried chicken, watermelon, catfish to some extent. Of course, the head scratcher is white. Southern whites were eating this food as well as others around the country. But it gained a racist stigma in the late 1800s. And that stigma exists to this day. We saw it most recently with references to President Obama. There would be people that would post things about him eating fried chicken and watermelon. And then they would say, oh, I didn't know that was racist. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting coincidence that you picked those two foods and associated with this black man who's the president. So, and even just to show you how hurtful it is, I still know African Americans who to this day will not eat those foods in public because of the stigma associated with it. I think that's painful. And I also hope that we can reclaim it because those two things are quite delicious. And don't give the stigma power, right? Say we're beyond the stigma. But you see those kind of things really developing in late 19th century culture and perpetuate throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. And is there sort of a general, a generational, that is, element to that? I mean, have you found in the conversations that you've had or some of the research that you've done that that idea of avoiding not just one but two delectable food items, that it does run along generational lines?
Yeah, I would say that I find it among older African Americans. I think with younger folks, because fried chicken has everywhere status now, I don't think people think about it as much.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely more of an older person generational thing that you put your finger on. I think that's definitely the case.
Mm-hmm. Adrian, do you have a personal fried chicken core memory, so to speak?
Yeah, so I have a few. One is just my own mother, the late Johnetta Miller. She was a fantastic cook from Chattanooga, Tennessee. So she could make Southern food and soul food like nobody else. So I remember we would, not all the time, but we would occasionally have fried chicken. And the kids, you know, she would make regular fried chicken, you know, kind of similar to what original recipe from Kentucky Fried Chicken, which may have been your first bite that you had in Southern Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
But we would like to have crunchy. And so with that, what she would do is she would make an egg batter and flour the chicken and then coat it in that and then reflour it and then fry it. And the crispy deliciousness was similar to the fried chicken we would get at fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
There was a restaurant called Jim Dandy, and that was how their chicken was. So it was like, hey, we can get restaurant food at home? This is pretty amazing. And then my second group of memories are just growing up in a black church in Denver, Colorado. Typically, we would have food-related events after church or associated with special occasions. And so fried chicken was usually served there. And so it was a reminder of just kind of connection. And so when I think about fried chicken in those contexts, I think about nostalgia, a loved one making this food so amazingly, and then also the connection that I had with my church community.
Mm-hmm. Adrian, among the books that you have written, there is one that is titled The President's Kitchen Cabinet, The Story of the African Americans Who Have Fed Our First Families from the Washingtons to the Obamas. And earlier, you had mentioned some of the negative imagery around Obama when he was in office. But with this book that you wrote, did fried chicken make an appearance in it?
Yes, because fried chicken was so beloved by so many presidents. Remember, we've had a number of Southern presidents. So they brought their taste for fried chicken with them to the White House. We've had a number of African-American cooks in White House history. And so they were often called upon to make that dish. Late examples would be George W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, Lyndon Johnson. They all love some fried chicken. Oh, man, Bill Clinton, my former boss, when I worked in the White House. All of them loved fried chicken and would have cooks make it. In fact, Henry Holler, who was a Swiss-born chef and served in the White House for 20 years, in his memoir cookbook of his time in the White House, he includes a fried chicken recipe.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about that recipe that set it apart from what you've seen?
No. I mean, the fried chicken, it follows when you're talking about fried chicken in the U.S., it follows pretty much two approaches. Either the pan fried, where you cover it approach to steam the chicken or just open air cooking it or deep fat frying it for fast cooking. It's usually one of those three methods. And then it's just a matter of varying the breading or using a batter to coat it and just the spices.
Oh, the spices, yes.
Yeah. So most people use just salt and pepper. In soul food tradition, usually you don't put a lot of spice in the breading or the crust of the fried chicken because it's just assumed you're going to put some hot sauce on it while you're eating it. And then you're going to get your spice and seasoning there.
Right, right. Now, Adrian, in our pre-show promo for this conversation, I had said that fried chicken is a national favorite and that its history reflects something about the evolution of the United States socially and culturally. And I think, you know, what we've talked about so far does bear that out. You know, that all of the styles of fried chicken out there shows that as well. Now, you're from and based in Colorado, but you've eaten all around the U.S., Adrian. What is it that you have observed and experienced regarding the range of fried chicken that is now being made around the country?
It's a great time for fried chicken lovers. I mean, this is close to heaven because not only do you have the traditional types of fried chicken that we are used to in the United States, but now you're getting versions of fried chicken from all around the world. One of the most popular is Korean fried chicken, mm-hmm. which actually has two variations. One is kind of the double fried, really crispy approach, and the other is with the sticky kind of sweet sauce approach. So you're seeing Korean fried chicken all over the place. You're seeing Guatemalan fried chicken that's very popular. You go to a sushi joint, they're going to have Chinese fried chicken, which is more kind of small nuggets. And that's something that's absolutely delicious. And also in Vietnamese and Thai food. So I think right now we have the ability to just experience fried chicken from so many different cultures. So it shows the diversification of the U.S. as well as the internationalization of the U.S. in terms of our palate. I think right now American diners are so much more open to taste from around the world than they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's glorious.
Yes, I totally agree.
And I forgot one of my favorites from Szechuan, the fried chicken that's served with kind of the green peppercorns, the numbing peppercorns and the chilies. That's one of my favorite types of fried chicken. So sorry, I forgot to mention that.
Oh, no, not at all. This is what this conversation is for. And what you're talking about does reflect what we have seen on our social media. So St. Louis Public Radio had put out a Facebook post asking for people to name the best restaurants for fried chicken in the St. Louis area. And among them, we heard about Amigo Joe's, which is a Mexican restaurant, Kain Tayo, which is Filipino, Tai Kei is a Taiwanese restaurant. And then, as you've talked about, Adrian, Korean fried chicken. I have some connection to that as someone who's Korean. CM chicken also here in St. Louis. Now, one of the things that we wanted to do in talking about fried chicken, I also had said earlier, National Fried Chicken Day is coming up. But if you love fried chicken, any day can be a celebration. And one of the comments that someone had left was some notes about places that are popular with others, but it ended with, you know, to each their own. And looking at this list, there are some new places I need to go try. I know that, Adrian, for you, food is something that can be a unifying force. What is it about fried chicken that has that power?
I think because there's so many types of fried chicken across cultures, it just creates a ready-made context for us to come together. So we can come together at a table, put different types of fried chicken down and say, okay, this is what I'm used to, but hey, what's that? And taste it. And maybe the person that brought that different type of fried chicken can talk about how it was cooked, how it's seasoned, maybe the context in their culture for when they eat fried chicken. And it gives us a chance to fellowship and then learn from each other and get to know each other better. And I think that's one of the things that's it's all about. And what better way to do that over some great fried chicken? Mm-hmm. Now, you have to make sure you don't talk with your mouth full.
Right.
Your parents told us growing up, but still, it creates a wonderful opportunity. And I just think it's because of fried chicken's variety, and also that it's quite good.
So my final question goes back to something that you had mentioned earlier about your favorite fried chicken having been your mom's version, that double battered, really crunchy, home-cooked dish. And tomorrow when we do our roundtable, we are going to talk about the best fried chicken in the St. Louis metro area. We're also going to get into the subject of sides. So to get us appetized for that debate, Adrian, and in about like 10 seconds, are sides essential to a fried chicken experience, or are they delicious but ancillary additions?
I think they're delicious but ancillary additions. That may get me in trouble, but fried chicken is so glorious it stands on its own.
Mm-hmm. And what is your favorite side?
All right. So I love having fried chicken with some biscuits, some greens, maybe some coleslaw or potato salad. And the coleslaw and potato salad should not have raisins in them.
Okay.
I'm just saying that as a public service announcement.
Duly noted. Adrian Miller is the Soul Food Scholar and a James Beard Award-winning author. Adrian, thank you again so much for joining us today, and happy early National Fried Chicken Day.
And to you as well.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.